This is WJBC This Week.
Congratulations and best of luck to an outstanding football team under the direction of head coach Brock Spack.
We just couldn't make a play that last drive and couldn't get to the passer, and that was that.
I really think the game came down to one play. We were there. I think we rallied together, and ISU made a name for themselves today. It's 29-27, last second loss.
I know they're going to win it one day.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we recap the top news stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, it's been FCS Championship Week for the Redbirds as Illinois State came up just short in the National Championship against North Dakota State yesterday. We'll have game recap plus interviews from Coach Brock Spack and others following the contest. Also this week, a counselor discusses how to cope with depression. This following the death of a local prep star, and a local family's triumph over a potentially fatal illness makes the big screen. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week, a special Redbird FCS Championship edition. It was a game the Redbird fans will no doubt be talking about for a long time, as Illinois State made its first ever appearance in the FCS title game against the three-time defending national champions, the North Dakota State Bison, the Redbirds' conference rivals. ISU had proved the doubters wrong all season. Picked for middle of the pack in the Missouri Valley, ISU defeated seven ranked teams and earned a share of the Valley title while blitzing through the playoffs, the toughest challenge coming at top-ranked New Hampshire, where the Redbirds stormed back from a double-digit deficit in the fourth quarter to win. The Bison had been there before, of course, and they appeared poised to add ISU to the list of title game victims, as North Dakota State running back John Crockett put the Bison up two scores in the second half.
Crockett gets it up the middle, carries it across the five, and is into the end zone for the touchdown. The Birds couldn't find him, couldn't bring him down. A couple of missed tackles. Keene had the last chance, but he couldn't do it. And now it's a 19-7 North Dakota State advantage.
The extra point made it 20-7. It turns out ISU was just getting warmed up. Junior quarterback Trey Roberson, who had been dazzling throughout the playoffs, was struggling. Just two completions in the first half. But he found his groove again when he needed to and hooked up with his tight end for a big play.
Little John forces him to throw it, and it is caught. Getting away is the Redbird player, and it's going to be a touchdown, Illinois State. Unbelievable, as it's O'Shaughnessy who makes the grab.
That 41-yard strike late in the third quarter put ISU within six at 20-14. After the Bison tacked on three more to go up 23-14, Roberson to O'Shaughnessy again on a huge third down.
Now he looks back to the left, throws it in the end zone, and it's caught! Touchdown! O'Shaughnessy again! Big game, James O'Shaughnessy with another touchdown grab.
The Redbirds were within two midway through the fourth quarter, but North Dakota State was determined to run out the clock, picking up several first downs, but not this time.
And look some more. Lots of time. Now he goes down. They finally sacked him. My goodness, what great coverage by the Redbirds.
North Dakota State quarterback Carson Wentz was stopped, forcing a punt, giving the Birds the ball, but with not much time. 2:22 left, but hope. And then, reminiscent of his game-winning dash at New Hampshire in the semifinals, the Indiana transfer Roberson came up big with his feet again.
No keeper by Trey. 40-yard line, 30-yard line. He's going to score. 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Redbirds. Don't see a flag. It's a touchdown, Illinois State.
Roberson, a career-best 58-yard touchdown run to give Illinois State the lead at 27-23 with a minute 38 to go. ISU missed the two-point conversion. That would turn out to be significant. The Bison know how to win, and they showed it again.
Morlock, the running back next to the quarterback, is going to try to run it in, and he gets in for the score, and North Dakota State takes the lead with 37 seconds to go.
Wentz scored from 5 yards out after a big pass play brought them to the doorstep. North Dakota State took the lead, but the extra point was blocked, leaving it a two-point margin. In desperation, Roberson threw his only interception of the playoffs to seal the win for the Bison.
And the Redbirds fall short. They lose to North Dakota State by the final score of 29-27. Bison fans are running out onto the field. They can't prevent that here at Toyota Stadium as North Dakota State wins its fourth consecutive national championship.
And Illinois State coach Brock Spack talked to WJBC's Craig Burchie after the loss.
What a fantastic game from a spectator viewpoint, but your team just came up just a tad short there in the end.
Yeah, I just told the guys in the locker room, I was obviously disappointed for them, but they played it with a lot of toughness and resiliency and resolve. We made some mistakes in the game, and we still were in it, and we thought we had it won, but there's some time left, and I told them we didn't lose the game, we just ran out of time, and that's the kind of way it felt. We just couldn't make a play that last drive, and couldn't get to the passer, and that was that.
You've had a long career coaching. Have you ever had a game with that many ups and downs over the last 6-7 minutes?
Maybe, but not in this stage. It's a big stage to play in, and I thought for sure we had enough time to go score. I really did. I thought we were going to win the game. I had a lot of confidence in our quarterback and in our offense. I thought we'd come back and win. Forced the ball in there and got intercepted to end it. But there was a lot of plays out there you could point to when we should have never been in a situation. We should have, had maybe a few more points on the board.
Make sure you had less. Of course, the Valley was on full display here, and we knew it was going to be an even ball game or a fairly close ball game, which it was. Does this vindicate the Valley and all that's been said throughout the season that those who doubt, they can't walk away doubting anymore?
Yeah, this is a great football game. I don't think this is real football, and I don't think anybody who watched the game could say this was one of a classic. Obviously, we'd like to be on the other end of it, but we're not. So we go back, set our jaw, and come back next year. I think the Valley was on full display here today, and this is Valley football at its finest.
The second half, the passing game started to click a little bit more. Was that blocking? Was it just timing, receivers focusing? What do you pin that on, or was it what they were giving you?
It was timing, and we just weren't real sharp in the first half. We dropped a few balls. We missed a few receivers, threw some things in the dirt, and then didn't break off some routes correctly. We were a little off. My worst fears, came to fruition in the first half. The passing game really suffers with a layoff like that because it's hard to simulate and practice. But we set our jaw and quarterback threw well in the second half. We did a much better job, and I thought we put ourselves in a position to win. Just didn't work out.
Your thoughts on North Dakota State, 4 in a row, that's an awfully impressive feat. Only one other school has done that before, and that was Augustana back in the mid-80s. That's quite a feat they pulled off.
Yeah, it's very impressive, obviously. But this one was tough. They had to earn this one. But hats off to them. Congratulations to them and their players and Coach Kleiman and staff that did a great job. They're formidable, obviously, but the birds are coming. We got some good players coming too. So don't sleep on us.
Key takeaways from this game heading into off season and then the 2015 season.
We're gonna probably have to play some good players. Five I think on each side of the ball, senior wise. But I feel we have some guys in the program that'll do a good job with that. Got a lot of experience. Our kids got a lot of experience this year. We got a lot of practice time with our young guys that weren't playing, that were redshirted, or didn't play a lot with extra practices. And this time was amazing. We've had probably maybe a spring and a half or two springs for them. So it should pay off benefits for us when we hit spring practice in March. I'm just really proud of us team, and they really had resolve. I don't see how anybody could watch them play today and not be proud of them because they just kept fighting, and that's just kind of the way they are. you know, even though, you know, there's some things that are stacked against them at times, they just kept fighting and battling. And it's just how they, you know, I'd have been disappointed if we didn't. You know, we kind of snapped out of it at halftime and played better in the second half, but didn't make quite enough plays.
I know maybe you haven't had much time to reflect already since the game's just over, but watching the community rally behind this team, and I'm sure maybe in the next few weeks you'll have a chance to sit back and reflect on everything, but some final thoughts from you here on the 2014 season.
Well, I got my Twitter all set up, and I don't really read the paper much, but getting all the tweets from Twitter, watching our fans, you know, down here and at the watch parties, and all the excitement, and all the folks back home in Bloomington Normal with all their support of us that maybe couldn't make the trip here, and then all the people in Chicago. That was amazing. The publicity we've got in Chicago is just unbelievable, and everybody knows that it's a big place for us recruiting wise, and just really appreciate the fans. I mean, they've been amazing. And this is what we're capable of here. And I hope that there's buy-in and people buy season tickets next year, you know, and really support the program, because these kids deserve it. And Bloomington Normal and Illinois State deserves it. This is a great product. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. And I just want to thank all our fans for everything they've done.
Well, it certainly was a great season, a great ride, Coach. I thank you and the players. The dignity and class that your team showed throughout the season, and you made it a heck of a lot of fun. Thanks a bunch.
Well, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
It's Brock Spack, the head coach, Dick, as they wrap up this season.
That was our Craig Bertie with Coach Brock Spack. More reaction from starting quarterback Trey Roberson, but first, senior long snapper Chris Hyland.
And those guys in the locker room deserve a lot of credit, man. There was 11 guys on both sides of the ball every single snap, given everything that they had, and we took these guys, the North Dakota State Bison, right down to the last snap, and give North Dakota State a lot of credit. They're a great football team. They're an incredible football program. So, you know, we just came up short. Coach Back told us in the locker room we didn't lose the game. We just kind of ran out of time, and I think he's right, because, you know, we had them right where we wanted them at the end, and there were just plays out there to be made. They made a few more than we did, and it just didn't fall our way.
And, of course, maybe you're thinking all those come from behind wins, or the mojo's going to work again for you, and unfortunately, like you said, you just ran out of time. Was that going through your mind?
Yeah, you know, when Trey broke that late run, everyone on the sideline was going crazy, but, you know, I looked up at the clock and knew that there was still enough time for them to do some damage, and they did, because they're a very good offense, and they moved the ball well. They moved the ball right down the field, but they gave us some time at the end to make some plays too, and as soon as we saw that there, and my kicker and I, Nick Oscar, as soon as we saw that there was about 40 seconds left on the clock, we knew that the game could fall into our hands. And that was all I was thinking about at the time, was, you know, not, oh my gosh, we're going to lose this, but, you know, that this game could come down to a snap from me. And so I just had to stay focused. But, you know, it didn't go that way, unfortunately. I would have loved to have gotten out there one more time and finished my career off on a game winner, but it just wasn't meant to be.
Well, it's the end of a great ride for you. You've had a wonderful 4 years at Illinois State, and I know it's probably early to reminisce and think about everything, but what was the tone of the locker room like for you? And, you know, this is going to be the final time out on the field for you with some of these guys.
And, you know, a lot of people have asked me that this week. You know, what are you going to take away memory-wise from this team? And obviously our ultimate memory would have been to win a national championship, and that didn't happen today. And it stings right now, but there's a lot of guys in that locker room that are hurting that are my brothers, you know. And when we look back on this season, you know, maybe it's a week from now for some guys. Maybe it'll be a couple months for others to get over it. But sooner or later, time heals all things. And when we come back 5, 10, 15 years from now to this university, and we'll be remembered as one of the best teams in Illinois State history, and, you know, we'll be able to look back, smile, laugh, and, you know, say that we were a hell of a team that laid a foundation for Illinois State football.
Very good. Well, sorry about the loss, but a great career. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished, Chris.
All right, thank you so much. Right,
Chris Hyland joining me now. Let's get Trey Roberson, the junior quarterback out of Indianapolis, who had a phenomenal game as well with the three touchdown passes, the long touchdown run. But in the end, it didn't turn out the way you had wanted, but still nothing to hang your head about with this game.
Yeah, most definitely not. Everyone fought pretty hard. Our team fought pretty well. It's always amazing to be picked sixth in the league and to make a national championship. We fought the odds all year, and I'm proud of these guys.
You're down 20-7. How difficult is it to contain yourself and say, okay, we can't get the 14-point play here? How, you know, you want to score, but yet you got to be careful as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah, when we're down 20-7, everyone just smiled on the offense, like, yeah, let's go. It's a good game, and we thrive in these situations, and we like these situations to have to really turn it up and put some points on the board.
The passing game in the first half really wasn't clicking all that well. I think you were 2-10, but the second half things started to really come together. What were some adjustments that were made or the keys that helped you get things going in the second half?
Yeah, in the first half I had to get back used to the game speed. Took three weeks off and I wasn't fully in rhythm. We had to practice through the snow and through the rain and it was tough to get back going in the second half. And I just told myself to let's go out and play some football. Offensive line protected very well all game and the receivers made plays.
You had that long touchdown run, which North Dakota State was really worried about you breaking off those long runs, and unfortunately for them, their fears came true.
I just trusted my reads and trust what I've been taught, and the reads said pulling, and it was open for a long touchdown.
James O'Shaughnessy, how big was he for you today?
Oh man, he's a great player. He's a great player on the next level. I can see that, and I'm gonna miss him.
Well, now you look forward to next year. I know it's still early for you, but. What do you take away from this as you go into next season?
I got a lot of things that I need to work on personally. We have a great shot to be here next year. Everyone's gonna come back and work hard on Monday, and we're gonna get ready to go.
All right, well, congratulations on a great season, Trey. Thanks for all the memories this year, and we look forward to some more magical ones next season. Good job.
Thank you very much.
That was ISU quarterback Trey Roberson with our Craig Burchie. Illinois State fans were no doubt disappointed but proud of what the team accomplished this season. ISU senior Steve Ellington, watching at Pub 2 in Uptown Normal, says it was tough watching those final minutes.
And Roberson ran it in for the touchdown to give them the lead. And, I mean, the place went nuts, but there's a lot of time left, so I was still a little nervous.
And fellow Redbird senior Pat Moran looks at the bright side after a tough loss.
That was just awesome. There's so much unity and school spirit. I loved it, but I don't know. We weren't expecting to win this game. Obviously, we wanted to, but it was still a historic season.
And regardless of the outcome, Missouri Valley Football Conference Commissioner Patty Viverito knew it would be a win for her league, guaranteed a fourth consecutive title after North Dakota State won the championship the previous 3 years. And she talked to our Scott Lachlan this week.
Talk about what that does and putting a spotlight on this conference.
Well, it's not just these two teams in the championship game. It really started back at the start of the season in September when every single non-conference foe we faced, you know, from every single team, top to bottom, all 10, pretty much just gave the country hell. and then all of that good work was validated when it came Selection Sunday, and we got five teams in, and then those five teams all won. And so it was just sort of the season of destiny. So I guess I wasn't even really that surprised. I was kind of expecting this to happen.
Yeah.
Not that I was, you know, foretelling anything here, but it just seemed right. It just seemed like this was our year. And after last year, when we only got two teams in and people were so disappointed and felt disrespected, let's just say this has been a very validating season.
Yeah, a little redemption.
A lot of redemption.
So for you to see these two teams, you know, the Bison almost, just from what I'm reading out of their newspapers and their radio station websites, you know, the fans expected it.
Well,
ISU fans didn't, I don't think, expect it, especially when we were, you know, the preseason polls, I know, are one thing that, you know, kind of drives me crazy, but it gives us a chance to talk about football before it actually begins. But they were picked to finish, I think, sixth in the conference out of 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, just shocked.
Well, it was a big turnaround from last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the predictions were all that off based on recent past performance, but they certainly made believers out of everybody really right from the start.
That was Missouri Valley Football Conference Commissioner Patty Viverito with our Scott Lachlan. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. The recent death of U-High swimming standout Jake Miller has brought the issue of depression back to the forefront, how to detect it, and how to help those who were struggling with it. The counselor with McLean County Human Services, Megan Moser, talked to WJBC's Dan Swaney about it this week.
Let's just start with the basics of a definition of what depression is. And you only have 30 seconds to do this. That's the hard part, is you can't really pin it down like that, can you?
No, not really. Depression is kind of a lot of different things. It's kind of different signs and symptoms that of someone who's feeling down. And it is kind of hard, you know, feeling sad, unhappy, and it's for a period of time.
When do you know if it's depression or I'm just having a bad day?
I think it just depends on for how long that you're feeling that way, and kind of how severe the feelings are. So maybe how many different things you're feeling and if it's been going on for a period of time.
The symptoms of depression, I guess, vary from person to person. But what are some of the basic symptoms that somebody has depression that really needs to be addressed by a physician?
Sure. I think when you have signs and symptoms, they can kind of be in different ways. Some are physical, so maybe a lack of energy, maybe sleeping too much or sleeping too little, having maybe headaches, things like that. But then you can also have ones that are a little harder to explain, so maybe ones of how you're feeling, psychological, feeling sad, anxious, helpless, hopeless, more irritable, things like that. And then maybe you're crying, withdrawing from other people, not wanting to be around other people, maybe a lack of motivation to do things. Those are, especially if you're having those for a longer period of time, that's when you really want to talk to somebody about that.
Megan Moser is our guest from the McLean County Center for Human Services. We're trying to help folks out with figuring out the depression disease. And I use disease because I think you have to these days, don't you, Megan?
I think, yeah. You know, being able to say, you know, depression is a mental health issue that people can struggle with. And being able to talk about it is big. You want people to be more comfortable with talking about how they're feeling.
The one other symptom that I was going to bounce off of you, because I've always heard that if you have problems sleeping, mm-hmm. wrapped up with the rest of the things you were talking about, that might also be a danger sign to look for.
Absolutely. Problems with sleeping can increase lots of different issues that you could have. So it is definitely something, a concern, and is a sign or symptom of depression as well.
When do you know that it's time to go see a doctor?
Well, obviously, I'm not a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, but if you're starting to see these signs for a longer period of time, so, you know, if you're not feeling any better and it's been, you know, several weeks, then you want to be kind of talking with someone. And I think a lot of times people somewhat start with their primary care physicians at first, or, you know, there's different kind of therapy counseling services available as well that you can kind of talk with. So I'd say if it's going on for a period of time, several weeks, then you may want to talk with someone.
If someone is having the symptoms that you talked about, mm-hmm. Get in front of them rather than wait for them to pile up on you, because that just makes it harder to dig out of the hole.
I think what happens is that it's kind of one of those things where a lot of things can maybe it was situational at first, but then because more things end up happening or the feelings don't go away, they can kind of get to be more severe. So maybe something that started as not a big deal now has become a bigger and bigger deal, and now it's starting to impact how you work or going to school or things like that, once it starts impacting your daily life, your relationships, how you work or study or things like that, that's when you really want to be reaching out and try to talk with someone.
At what point should a parent or a loved one get involved when a person who is depressed really doesn't have the capability to do that on their own? At what point, what kind of advice could you give a parent or a loved one to help out? That's tough, isn't it?
It is very tough, and I'd really say all throughout. One of the biggest things would be to just notice different things. Sometimes, especially young adults, they may not want to, or young people may not want to come to you and talk to you, but you can notice a lot of different things. Maybe they're not sleeping. Maybe they seem down. They're not being around people as much. If that's the case, making sure to just say something, to approach them, to, say that you're concerned, say that you want to be supportive, and have them be able to talk with you. I think that that's a big thing, because the more often you do that, they may not want to talk to you the first time, but that doesn't mean if you go back and try to talk to them again, they won't open up maybe the second or third time you try to ask. So not just ignoring some of the things that you might see, some of those signs or symptoms we talked about.
And this is more of a parenting question, and again, I think it's probably different from person to person, but you know, if you have teenager, adolescent kids, even a grown-up, even a husband or a wife, they're going to say, oh, no, everything's okay, because they don't want to either open up because they just don't, or they don't want to open up because they're afraid that they're going to hurt you or make you feel worse. Is
Absolutely.
That fair to say?
Yeah, I think that there is kind of that they don't want to burden the other person with their problems, so maybe it is a family member or a friend. But I think being persistent can be very helpful, and discussing what you're noticing. Saying, I've noticed that you haven't been sleeping, or I've noticed that you're not participating in things you used to. Maybe they used to enjoy something and they're not enjoying it anymore. That way you can specifically tell them what you're concerned about, and then just offering to listen and being able to listen in a way that you're not judging, what they're saying. It's just more of being available and being supportive so that they feel open to being able to talk to you. And like I said, being persistent, they may not do it the first time. They may say no, like you said, but the more that you ask, the more that you're offering that support, the more likely they might come back to you the next time.
That was Megan Moser, counselor with the McLean County Human Services, with our Dan Sweeney. A local family story will appear on the big screen at the Normal Theater this month. The world premiere of Hoovie will be on January 31st. It's based on a book written by retired Normal firefighter Jeff Elliott about his son's recovery and triumph following a brain tumor. They both talked to WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds this week.
Eric had a brain tumor when he was 13, about the size of my fist, so it was a massive one. A lot of miracles happened to save his life, and you left him with double vision, couldn't run or walk without falling, but they did surgery, and he had a dream to play basketball, and they told him he'd never play again. Part of his skull was missing. He ended up playing, got a college scholarship, scored 30 points in the last second shot to win the game in the Division II playoffs in Chicago. And while we sat in the stands, a couple people said to us, oh, you're so lucky. Everything comes so easy for your son. And I thought, if you only knew the truth. So I decided to write a book about it, and wrote a book in 2004, never dreaming that it would be made into a movie. 5 years ago is when I was contacted first by producer to make it into a movie. Just somebody placed it in his hands, and the next thing you know, here we are.
Really? A buzzer beater to win the game in Division II? This is what, somebody, and maybe the guys who were covering on the radio said, you couldn't write a movie script like this. And lo and behold, somebody did. You wrote the book, and now it's a movie. Hoovie, talk about what it was like for you after the tumor was discovered. I mean, you had to learn everything all over again. You had to learn to read, to walk. Talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so this was, I was starting from ground zero. I had to relearn how to walk again. I had to learn how to run without falling. I had double vision for 6 months. I mean, I had an obstacle in front of me that seemed like a mountain. Seemed like I couldn't do it by myself. And matter of fact, I couldn't. One of the things I learned from this is I can do all things through Christ Jesus that gives me strength. And that's kind of been the foundation of what has led me to keep fulfilling my dream, keep pursuing my dream, even though I kept getting knocked down. And that's kind of the inspiring story about this is that you can pursue your dreams just through about anything. And it's about never giving up. It's about life throwing curveballs. And it's not what what happens to you in life. It's what you do with it. So that's kind of the moral of the story. And I'm very thankful to be here today.
Let's back up here because we should mention you guys are local.
We are. We live in Normal. Eric lives in Bloomington.
Eric lives in Bloomington. Played high school basketball in Stanford. Beautiful Stanford, Illinois. Am I right?
Yeah. That's right.
For Olympia.
That's right. Yeah, played at Olympia.
All right.
So we talk about, or you've talked about, the many miracles that happen along the way. Talk about the miracle that I remember, the dramatic scene in just trying to get Eric to the hospital, because I think that is what is, and then what happened when you got there.
Well, I'll kind of expand on that a little bit because Eric didn't remember. He was kind of out. But, you know, it was the worst blizzard in 20 years in 1999 that it hit central Illinois, 4 feet drifts. We lived out in the country, and we had a two-wheel drive pickup truck. We started out, and you know, every drift you hit, you slow down, the snow flies over the top. And bottom line was we were stuck in a ditch, snow over the tires up to the wheel wells. And believe it or not, we had angels that helped push us out. You know, I didn't see them. I felt them. Ruth, my wife, had a vision and saw them exactly, and we kind of put it together later that night. But that's depicted in the movie coming up, and it's kind of – we had to – it's kind of – I don't want to spoil it, but the way that it's depicted, we ran out of money to computer enhance it, and so we tried to do it biblically that would be biblically right and still portray, you know, pretty much what happened. So that's kind of in there. And then we get to the hospital. In a blizzard and a snowstorm when everything's shut down, Dr. Kettner, a world-renowned neurosurgeon, shows up in the basement. Said he later had no reason to go to the basement, but shows up the instant it appears on the MRI screen and completely takes over. Felt that he would not have made it through the night because the pressure was so great on the medulla, which controls your breathing, heart rate, respiration, things of that nature. So, and then another doctor earlier in the day, Dr. Backus in town, we called him, and he knew immediately that it was a tumor because his eyes went crossed. He said, get to the hospital no matter what. So Dr. Backus instilled that sense of urgency in us to make it there. And so that's.
And you have some experience in emergencies because you were at the time a firefighter for the town of Normal. You know, when the accident happens in the snowstorm, I'm watching this movie now. If I don't know it's a true, I'm thinking, okay, this is over the top now. Yeah. You know, the kids, you think he's dying, you're taking him to the hospital, and the snowstorm, the drift, your car crashes, or your truck gets stuck. Is that what it
is? Stuck in the drift, right.
Yeah, it gets stuck in the drift. All right, so. Obviously, you know, spoiler alert, he's sitting there in front of us.
He lives.
He lives. But talk about, this is not, you talked about running out of money and you couldn't use any special, you didn't go with snow angels in the snow or anything like that.
We didn't go, no, we didn't go, cheesy. Yeah, that went cheesy.
But this is, I'll call it a major movie. You've got stars in here that people recognize. First of all, the guy playing you looks exactly like you in Patrick Warburton. This is, if you're not familiar with Patrick Warburton, he's Putty on Seinfeld, one of the voices on Family Guy. He had, what was the other one, Rules of Engagement.
Right.
So he's been on several television shows and in many movies.
Right.
Very familiar. If you're not familiar with the name, you'll see him and go, oh, yeah, I know that guy. So talk about how this became a movie now.
Well, you know, it's funny. Howie Klausner, who wrote Space Cowboys, picked up the script and did a phenomenal job of making it into a script that was, you know.
So he picked up the book and then wrote a screenplay.
And then wrote a script
okay.
from it, right. And, you know, unfortunately, we had to leave several things out. You know, Jennifer had bacterial spinal meningitis a month after Eric got out of the hospital. And unfortunately, we had to. It was written in the script originally, but we had to leave that out of the movie. It was just too much sickness. So we had to.
Your daughter Jennifer, we should mention, she's here right now.
She's here taking.
She's
pictures.
The one that didn't want to play basketball anymore. Yeah, is that
she's
right?
The one.
She's chapter
one.
Six of the book.
I don't want to play basketball anymore.
But you know, we had to actually dial the movie back from reality. It was too much. Too much sickness. Too much that went on. And so Howie wrote this script, and then Echolite Studios. From Franklin, Tennessee, picked it up and took it over. And then we entered Sean McNamara, who is the director, and you might recognize that name from Soul Surfer. He directed Soul Surfer, the girl that got her arm bit off by the shark.
Which is a great movie.
Fantastic
And he did
movie.
A great job in telling that story.
And so Sean, for a $2 million budget, made it look like a $20 million movie. It is just fantastic. But, you know, it's an all-star cast. We have
Lauren Holly
that plays Ruth. We have Cody Lindley from My Dog Skip that plays Hoovy.
Hannah Montana for those young listeners.
Yes, right.
And he looks so much like you. I think that was great.
That's
casting.
The glasses.
Yes, it's the glasses. Yeah. We have Allison Stoner, very popular and from Phineas and Ferb, plays Isabella. And
were you happy with the choice that they have? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, plays right. Jen. Charlie Robinson from Night Court plays the coach. Glenn Morshaw from the 24 series, Aaron, the Secret Serviceman of the President that was on that series for 10 years, plays Dr. Kattner.
You know what the difference between a $2 million movie and a $20 million movie is? Catering. You
yes.
guys didn't eat the whole time, did you? You had to go out and buy your own food. Catering is what shoves the cost way up.
But it's amazing that you got all those stars and managed to do this movie with $2 million.
It truly is. It's amazing what they were able to put together. But, you know, so when the word got out, we had so many stars that wanted to participate. And, you know, for us, that's a blessing. And they've done it. William Baldwin plays the minister in there. Stephen Baldwin. Yeah, one of the Baldwin brothers. They just wanted to be a part. They didn't volunteer, but, you know, we were able to be reasonable. It's not a big budget movie, but it looks like a big budget
movie. Well, it certainly does.
That was Jeff and Eric Elliott from Hoovy the Movie with Scott and Colleen. The Weekend News is next. This WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. The Illinois State football team lost a heartbreaker in Saturday's national championship against North Dakota State. A recap from WJBC's Adam Stasinski.
The final of 29-27 shows just how hard-fought the game was. NDSU took the lead with less than a minute left in the game, not long after the Redbirds had taken the lead with 1:40 to go.
Morlock, the running back next to the quarterback, was going to try to run it in, and he gets in for the score. And North Dakota State takes the lead with 37 seconds to go.
Senior lawn snapper Chris Hyland says this team has a lot to be proud of.
We look back on this season, you know, maybe it's a week from now for some guys, maybe it'll be a couple months for others to get over it, but sooner or later, time heals all things. And when we come back 5, 10, 15 years from now to this university and will be remembered as one of the best teams in Illinois State history.
ISU coach Brock Spack said after the game his team didn't lose, they just ran out of time. Adam Stasinski, WJBC and WJBC.com.
The mother of an alleged murder victim testified in court this week. 24-year-old Danielle Fisher was called to the stand regarding the death of 3-year-old Robbie Kramer in March of 2013. Nicholas Compton of Colfax faces first-degree murder charges for the death. Fisher testified about multiple incidents where Compton told Fisher about various injuries Kramer suffered, including one March 17th of 2013.
He told me that he ran to the bedroom to get a towel because he forgot to grab one before he put Robbie in the bathtub, and the suction cup that I had my razor sitting on, it fell off and it fell into the bathtub, and Robbie had picked it up and tried to shave his face.
Fisher says other people expressed doubt about the injury being a shaving accident. She also faces similar charges in a separate trial and was given immunity for her testimony. Bloomington's police chief has apologized for comments an officer made while responding to a large fight that's the focus of a battery trial in McLean County Court. Sergeant Ed Shoemaker reportedly told another officer he hopes the black stabbing victim, quote, bleeds to death. This was on an audio tape, which the judge ruled won't be heard by the jury in the trial of Gabriella Calhoun. Hefner says the officer was disciplined and the department doesn't condone the comments. And local law enforcement agencies and a group of community organizers have scheduled an event to foster dialogue between police and the community. It'll be on January 22nd at the City of Refuge Church in Bloomington. Republicans called it a naked power grab. The special session passed by an all-Democrat cast in Springfield for the comptroller's position in 2016. Dave Dahl reports.
Differing perspectives, Representatives David Harris and Jack Franks.
The voters of Illinois did not just elect Judy Bar Topinka. No, the voters also elected Judy Barr Topinka, the Republican candidate for comptroller.
We don't own these offices. No political party has a right to control these offices. These offices belong to the citizens of the state of Illinois.
It's unlikely the bill would go anywhere next week when Republican Bruce Rauner becomes governor. But that's show business.
At the Capitol, Dave Dahl, WJBC and WJBC.com.
200 Caterpillar workers in central Illinois are about to lose their jobs. Caterpillar executives say workers from their Decatur and East Peoria plants will be laid off January 19th. They say the layoffs are the result of a weak market for the mining industry. The company will offer support services to the workers who are laid off. No word on how long the layoffs will last. Congressman Aaron Schock issued a statement blaming the layoffs on the Obama administration, saying the jobs are the, quote, latest casualty in the Obama administration's war on coal. Up next, the week to come. This WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now we take a look ahead at the week to come. Coming up, life gets back to normal on the Illinois State campus for the spring semester following the football team's trip to the FCS title game. On Monday, Bloomington's City Council holds its first meeting of 2015. And on Wednesday, the Unified District 87 school boards will both meet. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, or if you missed any of our Redbird interviews and our FCS coverage on WJBC, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Stock.